It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Sozi!
No, that's Matthew Sozi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host...
Richard Propes. Just made it perfectly obvious. My name is Richard Propes, and I am from theindependentcritic.com, and we are going to have a lot of fun today. Joining me is...
Austin Luger from thefilmyap.com.
Awesome. And we have a special guest. We are starting off this week talking about the Heartland Film Festival, which kicked off last night. Were you at the opening night?
I was indeed, yes.
What did you think of The Way?
The Way was a truly lovely film. I thought it was. What I look for in a movie is a personal story and what feels like a genuine story, and I definitely saw that reflected in the film.
Exactly. The audience seemed to embrace it. Martin Sheen joined us for the evening and was very well received. He was very gracious. He was very open. He went out of his way to meet people. Emilio Estevez, who wrote and directed the film, was also there. And the film opens next week, so if you weren't able to join Heartland last night, you will get a chance to see the film soon. I have with me today, we have with us, Julian Higgins, who is the co-writer and director of a short film, a 25-minute short, called The Thief. It is a winner of a Crystal Heart Award this year. It also received the Gold Medal Award in the Student Academy Awards. And I want to read the description of the film. The Thief tells the haunting story of Mehdi, a 12-year-old Iraqi boy who unwittingly befriends young Saddam Hussein in 1959. 40 years later, in 2003, the two men meet again in very different circumstances.
Yes.
All right. So, okay, first of all, where did the idea for this film come from?
Thief is a story that I've been wanting to make for a number of years before I actually got the chance to make it. It started reading about the capture of Saddam Hussein in Newsweek in 2003. There was a great article called How We Got Him, and it was the story of how he was eventually tracked down and captured. But I became really fascinated with the character of a dictator who loses his absolute power overnight and then has to hide among the people that he oppressed. Mm-hmm. And I thought that would be a really interesting character to examine in a movie. And I didn't really know what I was going to do with that, but it was definitely something that I was interested in, especially when I started, you know, thinking about what it would be like for a human being to drive around, you know, hiding in a country and looking out the window, and I was just interested in seeing that in a film. And then I thought about it for a number of years, and I did other projects, and then when I was accepted to the American Film Institute in California, I'm from New Hampshire originally, nowhere to make a movie set in Iraq in New Hampshire, so... When I got to California, I was like, this might be my chance to make this as a short, as my thesis film at the American Film Institute, and that's what I did. So it was really a 6.5-year kicking around in my head process, and then it took about a year to research and write the script, and then we shot it in 6 days and edited it for another 6 months or so.
Wow. And
so
you
it's
shot
a long process.
You shot it in California.
Yeah, it was shot about 40 minutes north of LA on a film ranch in Acton in the Antelope Valley.
Now, how did you cast the film?
My dream cast was going to be all Iraqi, all non-professional actors.
Mm-hmm.
And I had made a film in my undergrad called No Wind, No Waves that was all non-professional actors, and it was set in Boston in an immigrant community. And I was really enthusiastic about working with non-actors. But in L.A., there's a great pool of Arab actors. Mm-hmm. And they're they love the idea of, you know, doing something other than a terrorist as a role. Mm-hmm. So I got a lot of submissions for, you know, the Arabic speaking. It's all in Arabic. The film is in the Iraqi dialect. And so I got a lot of people coming out for the film, and I had it's a small pool of actors, Arabic speaking actors in LA, but it's very vibrant. And you know, I had a good selection. There are a couple non actors. The young Saddam Hussein is actually a refugee from Iraq.
Wow.
And he lived through the invasion and made it to the United States, and so it was a very personal project for him.
Do you speak Arabic?
I don't speak Arabic in the least. For those of you listening on the radio who are not an Arab, I've been to the Middle East once. I'm a white guy from New Hampshire.
How is that as a director to direct a short in language that's not your own?
The film that I mentioned for my undergrad was all in Cantonese. Wow. So I had done it before, and I really enjoy it. Because for me, film is visual storytelling. Mm-hmm. And if you don't see the relationships, you should be able to mute a film mm-hmm. and understand the basic relationships, the basic scenarios, and feel something, hopefully. So taking away the aspect of trying to, you know, I'm okay with the actors taking some liberties with the script. I'm not a stickler for the dialogue. I'm not David Mamet or something like that. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with, you know, actors bringing something to the role and experimenting with it. So, and I trusted them. I went through a long casting process. So, you know, they believed in the project as much as I did, and it really wasn't a problem. It actually freed me up to look at what was really important, which is the relationships that are happening between the characters. The dialogue is very distracting, honestly. And I also think that if the story is never in the dialogue, mm-hmm. if the story is in the dialogue, you're in trouble. It's a visual storytelling medium.
Well, and let's face it, you're starting off with a subject here that is very visual for people.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was all over the news.
Yeah.
People know the image of Saddam Hussein. So you say the name, we get a picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and what's so great about the character, I mean, in a fictional setting, is the contrast between what he, you know, the visual when he disappeared, which was the guy we knew with the mustache and the beret and the uniform, and then him reappearing months later looking like a hobo, you know, pulling this guy out of a hole in the ground. Mm-hmm. And that transformation is what made me want to make the movie. What happened to that guy? And then, of course, as I worked on the film, then it completely, you know, I started investing my own experiences into it, and he was no longer the main character. But that was the starting point.
Wow.
It's such a... You talk about great themes and such an amazing concept and transformation. Was it always going to be a short in your mind, or did you think about a feature?
I had definitely thought... I was thinking about it as a feature, absolutely. Because I came up with the idea in high school, you know. And I'd been making movies since 7th grade, and I was always looking... I have a list of 10 pages long of movies I've come up with over the years. I didn't know what the ultimate format was going to be for the idea. The short film at the American Film Institute is a great opportunity because they have the resources, they have the connections, they have all the companies in LA that are giving them so much support. The American Film Institute was a dream experience for me as far as education. The learning curve was extremely steep, and I really wanted to challenge myself with the thesis film.
Mm-hmm.
I had some professors that were encouraging me not to do this project because they thought it was too ambitious. So I'm very gratified to have it here at the festival, done, completed. Mm-hmm. But I was really scared that I was going to have to make it because it was very ambitious, and I wasn't sure I was going to be able to pull it off. So,
wow. Now, tell me about can you explain the concept behind the gold medal student?
Yeah, the Student Academy Award has been, this was the 38th year this year. It's run by the same people that run the Oscars,
mm-hmm.
and it's one of their three main events, along with the scientific and technical awards. Mm-hmm. And they give every year a gold medal, a silver medal, and a bronze medal in narrative, documentary, and animation categories, mm-hmm. and experimental. And so the gold medal in the narrative category is kind of like the best you could possibly do with a student film, you know.
Great.
And it was just an incredible honor for us to win it, and we really didn't know until the ceremony that we were going to win it.
Really?
Either.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, we knew we were one of the top three, but
mm-hmm.
at the ceremony is when we found out, and it was one of the best moments of my life. So, to receive the award from Ed Zwick, the incredible director,
mm-hmm.
and he's an AFI grad as well, so, and we had talked before, and I mean, it really was just dreamlike. So, and then of course the student Emmys as well.
That's right.
We won a best drama and best director at the student Emmys. The director who presented me with the Best Director Award of the Student Emmys, Greg Yatanis, is an executive producer and director on House, the television show.
Well,
So I've been shadowing him now because of that for a few months.
Really?
So,
wow.
It's a lot of I've had a lot of opportunity come from the film.
Wow. So you really knew early in your life that film was something. I mean, because you made a high school film that also won an award.
Yeah, I had started making movies in seventh grade, and it was sort of the organic culmination of all my different interests, acting and drawing, and I did a lot of theater in high school and middle school, and so it was really, it wasn't like I saw a movie and suddenly realized I wanted to be a filmmaker. It was sort of, it was very organic, and yeah, I had made, by the time I graduated high school, I'd made two features, which I probably wouldn't show either of you gentlemen, but one of them did win a very nice award, which was a scholarship as well, and definitely helped get me into Emerson, which was my number one undergraduate school. And then I had known about the AFI forever. I mean, if you are interested in movies, you know about the AFI. Not just because of their conservatory, but just in general. And so I always wanted to go to the AFI. It was the only place I applied for graduate school. And
really?
So it was amazing to get into both of my first choice schools.
So you really do see a lot of value to that idea of film school.
Yes. I think that like any other educational opportunity, it is what you make it.
Mm-hmm.
The things schools can give you the resources to do what you want to do, but they can't really help you as far as coming up with the ideas or anything like that. You have to know that you want to do this and then take advantage of them.
Mm-hmm.
AFI in particular, the resources of the school and the people that the faculty they have, it's unlimited what you can accomplish if you really want to take advantage of the opportunity. You know, and Emerson was the same way. They've got great equipment and resources, and so I was able to make a undergraduate film on 35mm in Boston. You know, just do
it's kind of expensive there, so
yeah,
having those resources is valuable.
Yeah, definitely. And Hollywood is also very. I mean, the thing about Hollywood is everybody knows that they can get money from you, so like nothing, because that's the movie industry. Everybody knows. Everybody's a part of it.
Right.
So. Everybody knows it. I mean, it costs a lot to make movies there, but we stretched our dollar very well. So
when you got done with Emerson, you graduated from Emerson. When did you decide I'm going to go ahead and go to LA?
I knew that I needed to go to LA regardless.
Okay.
Actually, when I graduated from Emerson, the last year at Emerson, they offer an internship program.
Mm-hmm.
So I had gone to Los Angeles and interned at Universal for a semester because I knew I needed to be out there if I wanted to make movies and. You know, on a certain level is what I'm trying to say. Of course, it's possible to make movies anywhere.
Yeah.
But I had applied to AFI, and it's such an exclusive program, and I was assuming I wasn't getting into AFI, and then I found out I did get in, so it made it a very easy transition because I was moving out there to go to school.
So
I wasn't just jumping off the deep end, you know.
Yeah. You're done now with AFI?
I graduated last June. Didn't finish the film until December because we actually shot it right before we graduated.
Wow.
So.
And you've been going wildly on the festival circuit.
Yes, it's had a really great life. I mean, it's just really gratifying to have so many people see it. And yes, we've done really well at the festival circuit as well as awards and then Crystal Heart is sort of like. You know, I mean, as I was making the film, knowing what it was going to be about and what the themes were, I was kind of hoping in the back of my head that maybe it would get into Heartland. So
really, so you were aware of Heartland?
Oh, I submitted the films I made in high school to Heartland.
Really?
Yeah,
wow.
I've been aware of the festival since 2002, and have been following it. And every time I've had a film, I've submitted it, even if it was not really reflecting the Heartland themes.
Uh-huh.
But this one, I was sort of like, this could actually. Be a film that they would want to take, and so it's very gratifying to be here as a Crystal Heart winner as well.
So the idea of making a film that is positive and inspiring and
it's odd because I don't generally think of those kinds of things at the beginning of a film. It doesn't really interest me to know everything I'm going to do before I do it. You know, I want to discover why I wanted to make the film as I make it. I know that there's something there that is engaging to me and. what the interesting part is figuring out what that is mm-hmm. and making it as personal as possible. So if I know what I'm trying to say or what I'm trying to do from the get-go, it kind of loses its interest.
Mm-hmm.
The film developed hugely as I worked on it with the team.
What was something you discovered while filming Thief?
Well, you know, I had started out with the film thinking that it was going to be I knew what the structure was going to be, mm-hmm. which is it's there's a 2003 segment which bookends the film, mm-hmm. and then there's the memory that the main character has of his experience in 1959 as a kid. So I knew what the structure was going to be, but I wasn't really sure what I was going to do with that structure. But I did know that I wanted to talk about, you know, the moment when young people become adults and what that actually means and the hardship that goes with that. And in this situation, it involves some negative experiences surrounding Saddam Hussein, which is surprise, surprise, yeah. Saddam Hussein. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I definitely have been exploring those themes of coming of age, but also, you know, the separation from the parents, the sort of discovery of death as a young person for the first time, the development of your own kind of way to live, your own morality. All of those things are things that I knew I wanted to talk about in the movie, but I didn't really know what I was going to say. Mm-hmm. And then in writing the script, that's when all that stuff comes out. The process is to make it as personal as possible. And in doing that, that's just what came out for me, because that's what I was thinking through at the time, you know. And now I feel like I've made that film, and now I'm looking kind of forward to what the next film will be and what new things I'll want to explore in it. But I would say that it's really like the structure comes first for me, and then issues of story, mm-hmm. and then finally the plot. Yeah. The plot is almost like the least important thing, you know? If you don't know kind of what realm you're engaging in, there's unlimited possible scenes that you could put in the movie. My first draft of the script was like 40 pages. It ended up being 20 pages, mm-hmm. and our first cut was 37 minutes. So wow. It really makes no sense, you know. It's there's, and then on set you discover that scenes that you thought were about one thing are really about something else when the actors are there, and that's great. Like, you want to be open and available to embrace those things. And it's really exciting. I mean, I should say that my team was phenomenal and my cast was phenomenal. I mean, they were really... The movie would not be a success without them at all. I can't take the credit for this. I mean,
as a student filmmaker, how do you get such a quality of a crew?
Once again, it's AFI to the rescue.
Really?
AFI has six different programs. And so my producer, cinematographer, production designer, editor, and my co-writer were all AFI students.
Wow.
And then everybody else is professionals from the local filmmaking community in Hollywood, which you may have heard of.
Yeah.
So my cinematographer is, he knocked it out of the park. My production designer built this amazing location. I mean, we built the house that you see in the film on location. It's fully practical, no flyaway walls or anything like that. We wanted to make it feel for everybody there, including the crew, that it was really a different place and a different time. And, you know, it was crazy. We were doing, there's two different time periods. So we were taking out, we shot the 1959 stuff first. And then we took out all the greenery and all the plants and all the flowers so that the 2003 segment would look completely different. Mm-hmm. And it was all shot in the span of 7 days.
Wow.
So
no time for reshoots or anything.
We had 1 day of reshoots about 2 months later.
In what time period?
It was mainly 2003.
Okay.
But we got a few things for, like, stray inserts that we needed for 1959 as well.
These seems to have all started with a Newsweek article. What other things inspire you?
Most of my films really do come from inspiration of real events. Mm-hmm. And I'm you know, my dad is a historian. He teaches East Asian history, but he's really interested. And my mom also teaches French literature and film. So I came from two parents that were fascinated with history, so I'm very inspired by real events. My undergrad film was inspired by a random incident that happened in Washington on the Capitol steps, and the film sort of shows what could have possibly led up to that moment. Mm-hmm. And then Thief is inspired by that Newsweek article, and some of the projects that I'm hoping to work on in the future that I'm developing now are also based on real events. And the movies that I love are the movies that find human stories within real events, such as big movies for me. The Social Network last year was sort of like my, that was my favorite movie of last year, because it took that, you know, that real life story and found a very compelling emotional story within it. You know, it's sort of, it's just like in my film, it's kind of irrelevant that it's Saddam Hussein. You know, it's really a story of two human beings. In The Social Network, it's kind of irrelevant that it's Facebook. You know, it's about our culture much more than it's about Facebook.
I want to bring up a couple of things as we kind of wind down. Oh, first of all, your film is screening tonight with the other award-winning shorts.
Yes.
So people who want to see your film, that's what they need to look for.
Yeah.
The award-winning shorts collection.
And it's actually screening every day at the festival.
Every day. So, I know. I looked at that and I was like, wow. So I'll definitely get to see it on the big screen. I'm looking forward to that.
The movie is shot to be seen on the big screen, definitely.
Definitely. Okay. If you want to find out more about the film, he also has a website for it. It's thiefthefilm.com. If you want to find out more about Julian himself, you have a website.
I do. It's www.julianh.com. And we also have a presence on Facebook and Twitter. I'm at Film Julian on Twitter. I've been tweeting about the festival pretty much nonstop since I got here. Yeah, please come find us.
Awesome. We thank you for being here. Julian is going to stick around for a little bit as we talk about film reviews. We're going to take a break, and we will be back with the week's latest releases and DVD reviews.
You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show on WFYI 90.1 HD to the Point, Indianapolis.
Back, and we're starting this, what feels like an 80s reunion this week at the cinema. I don't know how you feel about that. I don't know, were you even born in the 80s, Austin?
Hey, I was born December 14th, 1989, so I was there for 2 weeks.
Thank you for making me feel old once again.
You're welcome.
Oh, man, of course you were...
1985.
1985, I read that, and I also felt old. So, but the first movie of this week...
I was born in 1987.
Okay, I'm leaving now. No, our first movie this week is a remake of the 1982, I believe, 1984 movie Footloose. This one's directed by Craig Brewer, and I believe we have the trailer of that wonderful film.
Whoa, hang on a second. Hang on a second.
Okay, I'll hang on.
That needs to stop. Okay, here we go. And trailer, go! Let's go!
We cannot be missing from our children's lives. They are ours to protect.
Public dancing among Beaumont's minors will be in violation of the law.
Mama, it's Fran. He's here.
Hey, girls.
I appreciate you taking me in. I really want to pull my own weight around here.
If you can get this baby running, she's all yours. Okay, the door sticks, and the gas pedal's missing. A couple of the, it's a fixer up.
He's cute.
You think everybody's cute.
Hey, watch where you're going, little guy.
Sorry, man, didn't see you.
Where are you from? You talk funny.
I talk funny?
Mm-hmm.
You should hit you from my end.
What's up, man? I'm Willard.
I'm Ren. McCormick.
What's the deal with the preacher's daughter?
You think I'm small town, huh?
Is she worth all that attitude?
You want to see something?
First sound of the police, and I'm a full of plug.
What, you can't keep up?
I take my feet off the ground.
What, am I grounded? Do I gotta go to prison?
What am I gonna do with you?
There's nothing to do, Daddy. This is it.
3 years ago, 5 seniors died in a car crash coming home from a dance, and that's when the whole town went crazy. You wanna go out and get some cheap thrills? You do it outside of Beaumont.
Thinking I could do something. Maybe I have a shot at making a change.
I don't want you to see that boy.
Why?
Because I've heard he's trouble.
Watch that attitude, son.
We speak for this town because we are from here.
I know you gotta do what you gotta do, but that ain't gonna stop it from happening.
There was once a time for that wall, but not anymore. This is our time.
We didn't come here to dance.
Are you even old enough to remember the original Footloose?
My mom loves Footloose. So
your
I've
mom loves
times.
Footloose.
Yeah.
So I really should have had your mom come on today.
20 minutes in, we're replacing me. This is amazing.
Okay, if you remember the original Footloose, you're probably going to either hate or love this film. Mm. That's kind of how I feel about it.
That's okay. A very controversial statement.
Because it's not as bad as the Psycho remake,
okay,
where it was note by note, mm-hmm, and it was just plain worse across the board. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't have Vince Vaughn in it. That helps.
All right.
You know, so it has people who can act.
Brutal. Brutal commentary.
Thank you. I get brutal when it comes to film reviews.
So Hustle and Flow to Footloose for Craig.
Oh.
Gordon. Interesting.
He had one in between, right? He did Black Snake Moan.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
I don't, that's not really much of a segue, is it?
That's not. It's not
music. Yeah.
This is kind of Black Snake Moan with music, though. I mean, it's
that movie had a lot of music in it.
That's true. This is directed by Craig Brewer. It is really a pretty faithful remake. It's changed a little bit, very little. You know, instead of moving from Chicago, he's moved from Massachusetts.
Oh.
Which. You know,
well, that changes everything.
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does. You've got Kenny Wormald as the lead character, Ren McCormick, mm-hmm, you know, who is this big city kid who relocates to a small southern town because his mother has died. Mm-hmm. So he goes into this town, you know, and of course we get the story of there's been this tragedy and this car full of kids have been killed. And the local preacher, now played by Dennis Quaid.
Is he going to save the town through dance?
He's going to save the town by not dancing. Oh. No, but no, Ren McCormick will save the town by
that
dance.
Would destroy the town, okay, if he danced, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, dancing is bad. That's why I don't even have feet. I don't want to dance.
You believe this philosophy so much.
Exactly. No, that's my Footloose story. See, I have a Footloose story, and I told Austin I was going to share this Footloose story.
I didn't doubt you.
I have an emotional bond okay to Footloose. The original Footloose. Okay, those of you who don't know me, because, of course, this is radio. If you don't know me, you've never seen me, you're probably better off. I don't know. I am a double amputee below the knee. I am in a wheelchair, and right before my first amputation, I had the doctor play the song Footloose in the operating room.
All right.
True story, Kobe.
Wow.
Yeah, and they actually did it. As I was going under, I could hear Footloose playing in the background. So I have an emotional bond to this film. I have an appreciation for not having feet because it helps me not dance.
Yes,
I know that's a bad segue. I don't know.
So how emotional are you to this new film?
This new film, if you liked the innocence of the first film, mm-hmm, if you liked the awkwardness of the fact that the kids really couldn't dance, let's face it, Kevin Bacon was not a good dancer.
No.
He can sing, but he can't dance. A lot of that's gone. I mean, you've got Kenny Wormald as the lead. He is a professional dancer. He was a backup dancer for Justin Timberlake. Mm. You've got Julianne Hough in the Laurie Singer role. So you've got someone who's been on, you know, Dancing
with the Stars.
With the Stars for, I so much hate that show. I can't even remember the title. You know, she's been on that every season. I think she's won it once or twice.
So is the dancing in Footloose good?
That's the problem. See, that's the problem I had with it. It looked more choreographed.
Uh-huh.
It looked more polished. These kids clearly were not high school students. Julianne Hough, first of all, doesn't even look like a high school student. Not that Laurie Singer really did.
No.
But Julianne Hough looks like she's probably close to 30. So that drove me a little nuts.
But she's supposed to be 17?
She's a senior in high school.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
that,
you know, and they're fighting for their, you know, their big senior dance, and you know, this is a less campy film. It's you know, even if you didn't really like the original, it had a great charm to it. That said, I think that this one's a little more heartfelt. I do like Dennis Quaid in the film. I think he makes for a convincing preacher. I think that he really shows his grief over the loss of his son in that accident. Mm. And so while his decision to get this dancing band, as ludicrous as it is, it's kind of understandable. You know, you can see he's acting out of grief.
So they made sense of the story, but not how the dancing gets incorporated.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm. Miles Teller is in the film. He takes over the part of Willard.
Okay.
Chris Penn. He's certainly not a Chris Penn. But he does a good job. He was in Rabbit Hole last year. So
was he the?
He was the.
Yeah,
he was the kid. So it's a good film. It's not a great film. It's a little edgy at times. There's a very brutal fight towards the end where some girls get beat up, and it struck me a little harsh for the film. Hmm. I thought, you know, maybe we were going to segue into Hustle and Flow for a little bit.
Sure. Hmm.
Fortunately, it calmed down.
She was chained to the radiator. It was all fine.
Exactly. It's rated PG-13, so it doesn't get too edgy. Good film, not great. I don't see why they had to make it, but it's a lot of fun.
I'll see it because of Craig Brewer.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's not hella bad.
That was Chris Lloyd saying, it's not hella bad.
That's
what I got from
that. Oh, okay. That's not hella bad. All right. Our next film up is appropriately titled The Thing. It is not a remake. It is a prequel of the original John Carpenter film, and I believe we have a trailer for that film.
We do. Something quite remarkable.
What'd they find?
There's a structure.
In Antarctica.
And a specimen.
Really?
Touching down.
This is Kate Lloyd's Columbia Paleontology.
Let me show you why you flew
10,000 miles. We estimate it's been here 100,000 years.
Well, I'm going to take a tissue sample.
Do you really think that's a good idea?
Yes, I do. You, my friends, will all be immortalized as the people who made this discovery.
Did you hear that?
My God.
Somebody was attacked.
But it seems everyone is fine.
Either someone miraculously healed themselves, or someone is not who they say they are.
What was it doing to him?
It's imitating his cells. I think this thing copies its prey and then hides inside it.
What are you saying?
Not all of us are human. It could be any of us. We can't let this thing leave. If it makes it out of here, millions of people could die.
Really want to see that film after that trailer? Seek counseling now. That's all I can say. No, the thing is, okay, first of all, it's got Erik Christian Olsen in it.
Yes.
Who has made almost every bad film made in the last 10 years.
But he's not, as an actor, that terrible. He just is only in bad things.
I didn't. It's wasn't difficult. He was in.
So you're saying he makes bad choices, like Kate Hudson.
Yeah. Well,
No, he's better than Kate Hudson. I mean, he's really good on Community, and he's good on a TV show called The Loop, so I will defend
him. Is he better than Cuba Gooding Jr. after the Oscar?
Yeah, because Community is after the Oscar.
How would you describe it? You have seen this one.
It's a very odd timeline for this movie. It was based off a short story, and Howard Hawks made into a really cool Cold War movie in the 50s, and then John Carpenter put his own spin on the material, which was an amazing movie, also called The Thing. And then the current version is taking exactly what happened in the 80s and adding nothing to it, just stripping it down to the same stupid jump scares that are almost calculated. The whole movie just seems to be a bizarre carbon copy. With why remake it and add nothing else to it?
Well, this is kind of a prequel.
It is a prequel, but it's more of a remake than, I guess, between Hawks and Carpenter, because it's just the exact same plot. They have almost the exact same scenes of, we can't trust one of us. We need to do a test, figure it out. It's like, it's the same script.
Show me your tongue!
Yeah, oh, that was a weird way to do it. The 80s movie had, you know, a blood test, and that was really creepy and suspenseful. Mm-hmm. This one has Ramona Flowers screaming about how we all need to look at our fillings.
Well, see, I feel like that might be the difference. You use the word suspenseful.
Yes.
In regards to the other film. There is a huge difference between suspense and, like, shocks.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which is, I feel like, I just listened to I haven't seen the film, but listening to the trailer, that sounded like a shock fest.
Yeah, you a know? Lot of only. Loud noises
the idea
crashes.
The idea is to have
and
people walk down a hallway and something pops out, right? Yep. Yes, yeah. And that's sort of not very, like, we've seen that so many times. It's just mm-hmm.
Well, part of the problem here was you had a first-time director, mm-hmm. first-time feature film, and he clearly has no concept of pacing.
Oh, very much so.
I mean, I thought there were times when the actors were really trying to create something, and the pacing was so off. I mean, they would be walking when they should be running. Mm-hmm. They would be just sounding. I mean, some of the paranoia, for example, the lead character, Kate Lloyd, is supposed to be feeling, it's just not. I mean, she's mouthing these words, she's saying these words, but it's like, you know, it's like
you don't buy into it.
You don't buy into it at all. You're feeling nothing.
And I think a lot of it is because there's almost no characters in this movie. Where mm-hmm. In the Carpenter film, The Thing, you have about a dozen of them, and they don't each have their own scene of, you know, I'm here because this and this. This is my job. They all just kind of coexist, and they all function as just real people, even when you have, I think Kurt Russell's first scene is him just pouring coffee on a bad chess machine. And that explains enough. This has no one having any sort of qualities. They're all just there to be slaughtered, and slaughtered in the most CGI boring way possible.
Yeah, it really, it was, and is it my imagination, or does Mary Elizabeth Winstead look an awful lot like Allison Hannigan in this film? I kept expecting her to pull out the tuba, and, you know, maybe we could have, like, an American Pie remake in the Antarctica.
I've never thought that till now, and I still don't think it. But I appreciate that you think it.
That sounds like a South Korean film that I would want to see.
Oh my goodness. She should have brought the tuba to Antarctica. That would have been a character trait for her.
It would have been, you know, it would have been some sign of life. I mean, other than the blowtorches that they kept carrying all around. And
this research facility had a lot of blowtorches.
They had which
sounds like they had a lot of weapons as well.
They had a lot of weapons.
They were equipped to fight the thing. But
not a lot of characters, I guess.
No character reason. A lot of plot holes. They had those.
so yeah. There's that.
There's that.
It's written by the same guy who did Final Destination 5 and the Nightmare on Elm Street remake.
Sure.
I think that pretty much says everything.
It does. Yeah.
Right there. Absolutely. And it's rated R. Don't waste your time this weekend.
No! No, 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 no! No! No, 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 no!
No! No! Okay. Now we are back to a film that nobody's heard of this weekend.
I've heard of it, just never saw it.
Which is just really kind of amazing when you consider that it has Owen Wilson, mm-hmm. Jack Black, and Steve Martin in it.
Yeah, I was in it until I saw Jack Black. Jack Black was in it.
You don't like Jack Black?
No. No, can't do it.
He speaks very highly of you, though.
Yeah, that's all he talks about.
Does he?
He does.
Wow, this is going to be awesome.
He's dying to do a film with you, actually.
Yeah. I'll have to give him a second chance.
Maybe it'll be the Big Year sequel.
The next big year?
You can go birding with Jack Black. This film is about three men and Kobe.
Okay, yeah, and Kobe. I was thinking, like, do we have a trailer or anything?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Let's do the trailer.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Steve Martin, and I love working with my two co-stars in our new movie, The Big Year. The incredibly talented Mr. Jack Black.
Sup?
And, of course, the very funny Mr. Luke Wilson.
Owen.
Sorry, Luke Owen, everybody. Big fan, love it.
There's going to be major fallout in a few hours.
Nuclear fallout?
Bird fallout.
Have you ever wondered what killed your marriage to Steph in 03?
First of all, I was married to Bridget in 03.
January 1st, I'm out of here.
You realize the phase after retirement looks a little bit like this?
You quit school, you quit work.
Dad?
Great talking to you.
I just want to do something big, you know?
We need a little adventure.
I'm doing a big year.
Big year to do all the things we never could.
Now.
You'd think you'd be exhausted by now.
Race to the bottom?
They're turning their quest.
They're men, dear. If they ever stop competing, they die.
Into the ultimate competition.
Yeah!
This is my year. I'm going to make my mark.
Can't miss the flight. There's not another one for a week.
It sucks for him.
Yeah. Cooking?
Yeah.
From the director of The Devil Wears Prada and Marley and Me.
One of us has to beat this SOB.
When it comes to comedy.
Did you just do a victory dance?
No. Maybe. Yes, I did.
Go big or go home.
You bought me drinks and got what you wanted.
Really?
You don't want to know.
Steve Martin, Jack Black, Owen Wilson.
Most people wake up one day and realize they didn't do everything they wanted to do.
Am I nuts, Edith?
Are you asking me as a therapist or as a wife?
Which one is cheaper?
This is incredible, isn't it? Unless there's a freak blizzard. I shouldn't have said there's going to be a freak blizzard. I jinxed it.
The Big Year.
Hey! Yeah! They're going up around the bend.
Have you ever wanted to see a film that was endorsed by the Audubon Society?
Yeah, why?
Well, because that's this film.
Oh, sweet.
It is wholeheartedly supported by the Audubon Society, which is probably why nobody has actually heard of it.
So what could it possibly be about?
What could it be about? I think it might be about birds. Mm. It is about three men who spend a year in this really big birding competition to see the most birds in the course of that year, and it takes them all over the country throughout that year. You have Owen Wilson.
You would not get that from the trailer.
You would not?
No.
Well, let's face it. If you got that from the trailer, would you consider going to see the film?
Nope.
Thank you very much. So maybe it is, in fact, wisely marketed.
I may be very confused already. But
yes,
how do
you are.
How do you compete by seeing birds? Do you have to take a picture of them? Do you have to just...
I'm not a birder, Austin.
You saw the film.
That is
in the film.
That is a great question.
Thank you. I don't
what
know
could
how
a bird watching competition actually involve?
Does one win a bird watching competition?
Yes.
And if so, how?
Yeah,
that's my big question.
These are the questions, Richard,
that you need to
Okay. I am going to take up birding, and I will report back to you next year when I win the championship. And I take it back from Owen Wilson.
You saw a film about winning a championship, but you don't know how to win the championship? Is that not covered in the film? You're asking too big
questions.
Fantastic.
You're just... See, this movie was not made for you, Austin. You are far too intellectual for this film.
Right. Okay.
Which is not surprising, considering we do have Owen Wilson, Jack Black, and Steve Martin here. Okay, Steve Martin's fairly intelligent.
Martin. Yeah.
But... No, that's, you know, one of many issues that one resolves in birding. But I'm sure that if, you know, we took call-ins, we could probably get someone from the Audubon Society to tell us how someone would win a competition.
I'm sure.
But I'm assuming they take pictures or they log things.
What
or
do they do in this movie, then?
Maybe they go by the Honor Society.
So what happens in this movie, then, if they're not doing any of that?
Yeah.
They're looking around at birds.
Okay.
They're living their daily lives. You have Owen Wilson, who basically takes the whole thing very seriously. I mean, it's his full-time job. He travels everywhere looking for birds. He's the returning champion. He's an arrogant he's Owen Wilson. He's arrogant but funny.
Okay.
You have Jack Black, who is
sidekick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a loser.
Probably a bit crass.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Though not as crass as usual. Hmm. He's actually pretty low-key in the film.
Okay.
He's actually more close to, say, the School of Rock Jack Black. Kind of just the nice guy Jack Black, but pretty low-key.
Okay.
which is very, it's paired well with Steve Martin, you know, who typically does the dry humor. He avoids any kind of the physical stuff for the most part. Fortunately, no Inspector Clouseau shows up here. You also have folks like John Cleese in the film. You have Kevin Pollak in the film. Yeah. So
Manhattan, what did you think of it overall?
You know, it was a lot better than I expected. You know, as film critics, we always get concerned when the studio decides not to screen it for us.
Yep.
You know, that's always a bad sign, unless it's Fox, who doesn't like to screen anything here in Indy. Other than that, we know that, you know, that's a bad sign. But there's a heart to the film. There's a lot of laughs. They're not, you know, laugh out loud laughs, but it's more of a gentle humor. David Frankel, he kind of gives it his touch. You know, he did Devil Wears Prada and Marley and Me. So he can do films with some heart and some humor, and that's really what he does here.
Marley and Me just destroys my girlfriend every time she watches it.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. She doesn't recover for weeks.
Aww. Yeah. You'll be able to recover from this film.
Yeah.
This is a safe film for her. So, anyway.
I'll keep that in mind.
This is not necessarily a good film. It's not a bad film. If you enjoy these three performers, there's a good reason to go for a matinee here.
Okay.
That's about the most I'd go.
Hang on. Here we go.
Yeah, it's not hella bad.
All right. And let's see, that's really it for the big review. There are a couple of films coming out this week that Austin and I are both excited about. Austin has seen one of them.
Yep.
Neither one of us made it to The Future, which is the latest Miranda July film. I'm a huge fan of Miranda July.
Yeah.
She did Me and You and Everyone We Know, which
that's
got one of my rare 4-star reviews.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great film, and from what I've heard, this is a lot like that. So that opens at Keystone Art Cinema this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And you did see Life Above All.
I did. I went to Ebertfest a few months ago, and that was one of the films that Roger showed, and now it's opening here this weekend. I don't love it as much as Roger Ebert. It's a very interesting movie. It takes place in South Africa, where a young girl faces tragedy very, very early on in the movie. And she basically goes on a Winter's Bone-like quest to kind of figure out why is the town the way it is. I have to be very, very vague because they are.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the end, they kind of reveal what's going on. And to me, the problem is half the audience already understood it because of a better understanding of things. I'm getting vaguer. And
you're not making me want to see the film at all.
I'm very mixed on it. In many ways, it's very vulnerable and impressive, and the lead girl is just absolutely amazing. I just have a problem with the structure, and I wish that they didn't just keep avoiding certain words to kind of wait for the most emotional moment at the end.
Mm. All right. Well, that is opening this weekend at Keystone Art Cinema.
Yep.
And they are having a midnight screening as well as Audition, the Japanese psycho thriller.
Have you seen that?
And I have seen that. That's a great film, so go to that. And it's now time for a short break.
You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show on WFYI HD to the Point, Indianapolis.
Are either one of these any good? Sir?
What?
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know what I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open a video store!
All right, and now we are to the DVD releases for the week. And it's some really big films actually came out on DVD this week. And let's see.
What are they?
What did we start with? How about Horrible Bosses?
Horrible Bosses. I just watched it last night. It's it was one of many R-rated kind of raunchy comedies of the summer, with a really impressive cast of Jason Sudeikis, Jason Bateman, Charlie Day, Jennifer Aniston, Kevin Spacey, Colin Farrell, Donald Sutherland, Jamie Foxx. It just keeps going on and on with people showing up, where three guys hate their bosses so much they decide to pull a Hitchcock-like plot and murder each other's bosses.
But it's funny. I wanted to say this for Charlie Day, because I love Charlie Day and Always Sunny.
He is great in this. He's not exactly playing the Charlie character from Always Sunny. So
okay.
He's a bit more together.
I was afraid that's what it was going to be. Kind of like the Michael Cera thing. Michael Cera doing Michael Cera, Vince Vaughn doing the Vince Vaughn thing.
He still screamed a little bit in this, but he's a bit more grounded.
And he's great with Aniston.
Oh.
Who is a delight in this film.
Because she's so surprisingly dirty.
She is completely raunchy in this film.
Yes.
And, I mean, if you haven't seen this side of Aniston, and she really hasn't done it much.
No.
But it's hilarious, and she does it well, and she does it convincingly, but she doesn't go so far over the top that you can't buy into it. She plays a very attractive dentist, and Charlie Day plays her dental assistant, and let's just say there's a lot of sexual harassment that goes on.
towards him.
Towards him.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. It is definitely he is very happily engaged, and she is not very happy that he's engaged.
This is a movie that I initially really steered clear of because of it's. I felt like I could hear the pitch, you know?
Yeah.
One of those movies where it's just so concept-driven. But I've been hearing that it's very funny, and the actors deliver.
I think it is funny when they avoid the concept, because there's so much of the plot that is flimsy, where a character is in this car only because he needs to be in the car to have something else happen. So it's not as tight, it's never as dark as it should be, especially with this premise. But the cast is this is the best thing I've seen Jamie Foxx do in years. We can't say his character's name.
I'm not really sure that's saying much, but okay.
I mean, him and Aniston are both really impressive in this. Colin Farrell's
incredible, snorting boss
with a crazy hairdo.
The come over hairdo.
I love when Colin Farrell makes himself look not like a movie star. I love when he goes against the grain of his sort of typecasting.
Yeah.
It's really admirable that he's willing to do that, I think.
I was so in fact, honestly, I had to wait till the closing credits to totally convince myself it was him. He so did the come over. I mean,
yes,
I was pretty sure because I knew he was in the film, but it was great. And then Kevin Spacey, who we know can play the bad.
I was a bit disappointed by him. I've seen this same performance of him the past, 5 years.
He's kind of the only one in the movie who's doing what he usually does.
He didn't stretch.
There are a few moments where the character's something very outrageous, and so that is funny just because it's more extreme than he usually is. Also, there's Wendell Pierce from The Wire, Bunk, playing Bunk again, which is, for Wire nerds like me, is awesome.
So if you enjoyed kind of a... I compared it to kind of an Office Space with a bad Santa edge. Or, you know, if you want to take the theme of the movie, the old movie 9 to 5.
Yeah.
But then give it a really dark side.
Not as dark, but yeah.
Well, 9 to 5 played it more for laughs. I don't know.
You think this didn't as much?
I thought this one was a lot more vicious at times. I don't know.
But at least... I guess just like 9 to 5, that boss is very kind of cartoonish.
These bosses are
even more cartoonish, where there's no way they would ever exist in reality.
It's a lot of fun. I think it actually goes where a lot of people thought Bridesmaids went. Bridesmaids was really funny this year. People loved it, but I think a lot of the shock value came from the fact that it was a female cast.
Which is disappointing. I think the script's really good by itself for Bridesmaids.
Yeah, exactly.
It did serve a very important role, though, Bridesmaids, I thought.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of like... It seems obvious to many of us that, you know, there's nothing inherently unsellable about female protagonists.
Exactly.
But Hollywood needs proof about things like that.
Yeah.
So it was really good that happened, I thought.
All right.
Now that was a good movie!
All right, and our next film is Kevin James being Kevin James in a Kevin James film.
No.
It is. I know. Do you like Kevin James? If you like Kevin James, you'll like this Kevin James film. This Kevin James film is not called Kevin James, however. It's called The Zookeeper. And guess what he is?
Architect.
Very good! You win
you.
The prize! Yeah. Okay, no. He is a zookeeper. He's a gifted zookeeper. He
what
works.
Does that mean?
The animals very like him. He treats them.
Okay.
You're very cynical today, Austin.
Kevin James brings it up.
Have you been hanging out with Joe Scherer too much?
We hang out. We chill. It happens. I'm sorry.
You need to stop, man. Man, it's sad. No, he works in this park. He is the typical Kevin James character. He's socially insecure, socially awkward. He works with a beautiful, you know, assistant zookeeper, Rosario Dawson, who I really like. And, again, she just can't seem to choose a lot of good projects.
No.
He's engaged to a beautiful – he was engaged to a beautiful woman who ended up dumping him because he's a zookeeper.
We have a bunch of – Kevin James.
Well, you know, I would probably dump Kevin James. Mm. We have a bunch of talking animals with voices like Nick Nolte, Adam Sandler, Cher, Maya Rudolph, Sylvester Stallone.
What?
I swear I wouldn't lie to you, Kobe, because you would just cut me off the air if I did. So I'm not going to do that.
Stallone made a bad movie?
Stallone's voice made a bad movie.
Okay, fine.
Stallone's perfect record is still there. Thank you very much.
That was a close one.
And anyway, it's an average film. It's not horrible just because Kevin James is a likable guy and he sells the likable character. Mm. It's very average film, in my opinion.
I won't see it.
Okay.
I second that.
Yeah, there we go.
No, 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 no.
All right. And guess what came out today, this very day, Austin?
I know the answer, but it's Green Lantern.
It's Green Lantern. Yeah. You're supposed to say it with enthusiasm and excitement because it's another Ryan Reynolds film.
It's Green Lantern.
And he almost reaches the point of showing an emotion here.
Finally.
That was CGI.
That's probably true. He doesn't even really look that good in green.
No, I guess. I don't. How do I answer this? I'm confused.
I don't know. Do you have any? Did you see this film?
I did see this film.
Did you?
Yeah.
What did you think of this film?
I hated this film. I think
don't hold back.
No, I think I can get worse. I think I wrote in my review that this is the kind of film that could be the death of the genre because it's so lazy.
If everything only that were true, I would be willing to give this a 4-star rating if it could be the death of the genre.
No, if people go out and see it, I mean, this is just there's nothing. There's not even a character there. Ryan Reynolds. Character honestly doesn't even want anything until the last 5 minutes. Because I guess I should save the Earth. He quits his job halfway through because I don't know why.
He kind of reminded me of Will Smith in Hancock.
But even Hancock at least wanted to get back with Charlize Theron. Ryan Reynolds just wants to smile a lot and occasionally use his all-powerful God ring to make Hot Wheel cars things. It's terrible.
What?
There's nothing that makes any sense about this movie. There's nothing there. It's the laziest.
You do have Peter Sarsgaard going completely over the top.
Oh, clearly he
which he's never
film.
Done.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of fun watching him turn into the Elephant Man.
Sure.
But, you know, other than that, this film has literally no redeeming values, but it has a lot of extras on the DVD. So if you liked the film.
So if we want to know how this terrible film was made, then we can.
Exactly. The director's commentary, How to Make a Sucky Film. Yeah, I think that's the title of it.
It's Martin Campbell, who did Casino Royale and the original State of...
Really?
Edge of Darkness back in BBC. Yeah, I don't know what's going on with him.
No! No, 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 no! No! No, 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 no! No!
We do want to remind you that the Heartland Film Festival is going on through next Saturday. And there are screenings every single day. They go until about, 10 o'clock at night, I believe. You have at least 5 or 6 opportunities to see The Thief. We thank Julian Higgins.
Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Once again, I am Richard Propes from TheIndependentCritic.com. I'm also the film critic for Sandy on the Scene.
Yep. I'm Austin Lugri. Find me at TheFilmMeUp.com and also my podcast and the nominees are.
There you have it. That's the show for this Friday. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show on WFYI 90.1 HD2 The Point, Indianapolis.